Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of Mill City Hall. Last episode, we included some clips of an interview I did with my friend Frank talking about his experiences of homelessness and experiencing mental illness. And I wanted to make sure to come back and offer the full interview here in case you're interested to hear more from Frank about his thoughts on those experiences and how society treats people having those experiences. Audio got a little bit choppy from Frank's side at the end, and also my allergies were pretty bad this day, so sorry if the audio is a little bit rough, but I think there's some interesting stuff in here. Without any further ado, here you go.
And Frank, thanks for joining me for an interview for the Mill City Hall podcast. Appreciate you being here.
Hi, Jesse. I appreciate being here, too. Thanks for having me.
And of course, we've known each other for quite a long time. I call you my friend, but I also sometimes call you my family because it feels like more than just a friend kind of relationship to me.
Thank you. Likewise, I feel the same way.
Well, so we're going to talk about, on the episode, we're going to talk about people in power and how they're talking about people who are unhoused, people who are experiencing mental illness, people who are experiencing addiction. And I wanted to talk to you because you've experienced some of these things. And I just want to start by kind of asking, like, you know, is it hard to talk about? Is it hard to talk about the time that you were experiencing homelessness?
It's definitely a difficult subject. A lot of it's actually that I'm just sort of, I think I've mentally blocked out quite a bit of the experiences I've had. So I only remember like snippets and pieces, but some of those were that I do remember are pretty traumatic. Or, you know, I feel like it's so in general, it's just also just a conversation. I don't really think people, I'm not even sure people want to hear about it, even like, you know, today, like my friends and family. I mean, I don't think it's something that I think it's uncomfortable to people. And so it's sort of hard to broach that with people to talk about it, you know. I mean, people would rather just treat it as if it was like happened and they want to move on, you know, if that makes sense. And I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think there's this, also there's this level of maybe like internalized shame that I experience for being, from having gone through it, that I don't necessarily should be there either. But it's just the way maybe society, that we could be a larger perception of the way society frames being homeless and what that entails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your perception of how society frames that experience?
The perception is that usually, at least historically, that is that was sort of a, well, you got on the streets, that's, you made some bad choices, that's your fault, you know, and we're gonna, now you have to deal with the consequences kind of thing, you know. It's a very harsh and unforgiving and kind of cruel, I guess, view, outlook, I would say, to the people that have not necessarily desert, you know, made choice, or they have mental health. We don't, like, there's a variety of reasons people can get homeless, right? And I don't think it's all necessarily throwing someone's own fault or that they end up that way, or but I feel like there's a lot of blame, and there's a lot of societies feels like we need to punish these people or they're a nuisance to people, you know, and it just feels like a shameful thing, you know, or at least it did. So something I'm trying to move past.
Yeah, and that experience of feeling like society labels it as a shameful thing, has that made the overall experience and the memory of it a lot harder for you?
It's been a long time. It's been 17 years, but I do think that it's, so some of that just sort of fades with memory, but some of it's also that I perhaps haven't moved past this due to other things going on at the time too, with my that it's been difficult to talk to people about. And also, like I said, I don't think people really want to talk about it either, you know, so I get the sense, at least in my immediate social circle, you know, so besides maybe aside from you and the people, I just feel like it's, yeah, I guess I would say that it is a shameful, or at least at the time it felt shameful. And I think society has made it, they try to make it sound like, you know, this is something like, oh, you you rolled the dice wrong, and you did this, and you land here, and now you deal with it, you know. So, okay, yeah, did that answer the question?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And I think it's really, you know, as always, there's been a, you know, people experiencing homelessness, right? People get into a situation where they can't pay the rent for any kind of number of reasons. But there's been this specific experience where people are in the way, especially since the pandemic, right? Like people are seeing more and more of like folks living in encampments has become super visible. And I think it's really ramped up the like rhetoric and people's reactions. And so I just have seen a lot of takes, right? A lot of articles, a lot of op-eds. And I just want to like, you know, you live out of, not here in the Twin Cities, you live elsewhere, but have you seen encampments, people living on the street? What's your kind of reaction as you see people in that situation today?
Sure. It's definitely increased noticeably visually. Just even in my city, I see a lot more. Even since I was homeless, I see a lot more. This is various areas. I mean, there's always been some in the downtown area. And I'm from Utah. So I've been to Salt Lake. It's okay to say, and there is like this, and it has kind of spread across. There's various encampments. There's more at the park. There's more stuff. And I sense a negative, general negative. I mean, I've had neighbors that have talked about it. And I just think like, it is sad because, and I do think people need more help because it obviously the city made the decision to split the shelter, the downtown, I guess it tells her into four different ones. I'm trying to do one question at a time, or I'm trying to add, so I don't know if like you're gonna ask this or should wait or what.
No,
so,
go for it. Whatever is okay. Popular.
Oh no, just the problem that is that it seems like the city has not been able to handle. It's just there's definitely an increase in that both locally here my and nationally from what I've seen throughout Salt Lake and just the country as well. It's definitely more visible than it was when I was on the streets. And I do see that they a lot largely stick in groups together, you know, because they have anything to do, you know, to make it through the terrible and rough experience.
And from what you can remember with your experience, did it feel safer to be in groups or like for your experience, how did you try to like make that as safe as possible for yourself?
I was not in groups a lot. I felt better outside of the shelter. I'm not saying my experience wasn't entirely, but I'd say normal. I might've been better off at some points during the, you know, with the shelter, but I do think I was also going through like mental health, crisis at the time too. So I would say, but the people I did talk to, I didn't feel threatened by the people I interacted with that were homeless for the most part. I mean, people were just trying to make it by. I mean, there was, you know, obviously some substance. Oh, gosh, I feel silly saying that, but there was some substance abuse on my part. But I feel like I was in danger. No, I felt more in danger of the police and the authorities than I ever felt by anybody else. You know.
Yeah. Well, tell me more about that. What was that danger that you perceived or experienced?
Oh, just having to move, being arrested, just getting kicked out of various places that, you know, there was a couple, you know, I was not really prepared about being homeless or how to like where public spaces were okay. And at least it seemed like maybe back then it was a little bit more. I do notice there's been an increase just using the bath, just having to use bathrooms in public places. Even now, just like if I have to go somewhere, I notice there's a lot more locked bathrooms than there used to be. I think it was like, felt like there was more, accessibility for homeless, at least back then, like, cause there were places with like bathrooms to use. And now a lot of places require hand customers or key, you know. I think there's probably as a response to as homelessness increases, this is how businesses and other places are responding, you know, which is, I don't necessarily think it's the right way to do things, you know? So, but with the police, there was always the ever constant worry about that, you know? So,
Yeah, did you have specific run-ins with the police?
Yes, I did. I was there was one time I was went up to use the university at the university here. I went to use their computers, and I was just sitting on the computer, and it was like a guest house, little hotel, like little thing. It was just in the lobby. I wasn't really harming anyone. I was just hanging out there. If they had asked me to leave, I would have, but I think I was just on the computer, and I was remember like my hand was on the mouse. I remember someone grabbing my hand, and then the police violent. I was an officer. It was the university campus security, but they pretty much grabbed me and like took me aside, and then they were threatening to arrest me because I guess the security had been called on me, but I wasn't warned or anything. It just seemed like a very aggressive approach, they didn't want me going there, but I think they didn't tell me that, to not come, they just called security on me, and then the security physically like had their hands on me, And so they didn't arrest me, but they did definitely that definitely was unfortunately effective in scaring me away from made my life harder because I definitely didn't go back to that guest house after that, So I definitely tried to use the computer there. But, there was at least one time I was trying to buy some substances for a very small amount of drugs from somebody that it turned out to be, it was downtown, and it turned out to be an undercover cop, and a bunch of police swarmed in on me. I was taken. This is the one time I did. I was in jail for a week or so for this, but, they didn't even have any proof. I didn't even have anything. I was trying to buy something, but a very small amount. And I remember them yelling at me and asking, where's your pipe? And they were yelling. And then I do remember being like in a holding cell. And I had to go use the bathroom like pretty badly. And they told them I had to pee, and they wouldn't let me pee or let me go. They wouldn't let me urinate. So I ended up having to go in my pants, and they put a garbage bag over me. and then drove me to jail, and it felt humanizing, because it's like they have, instead of just letting me use the bathroom for a few minutes, they just sat there on me handcuffed, detained, well, and then let me ear piss myself, and so it's just, I feel like that's the way they treat, people, I mean, I think that's an indicator, that's a pretty good indicator of how they feel, they won't like, sure.
That week you were in jail, did you feel like there was anybody in from law enforcement or correctional officers who had any kind of compassion or asked you how you're doing or anything like that?
Hell no, absolutely not. No, I don't think so. Not that I remember.
So, yeah, that is the same experience. I was only in jail for 2 days after a protest, but I had the same thing. It was a very thick sensation of, oh, nobody in charge here gives a shit about you.
That's how I feel. Once for a different mental health thing, but every time, and I remember they couldn't even get my name right. They spelled, they kept saying my name wrong, my last name. So it was just like, there was, and they abused, but that's, it was very kind of shocking to just see that they're just willing to let someone, urinate themselves and then put a bag, rather than just do the simple compassionate thing of letting them use the bat, rest. Like what, they had me, I wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't running away. They wanted to put me in and this is also like a minor, very minor drug crime. Like, I just don't see it. I don't know, but they treat you like you're the scum of the earth. So I guess so it's like, that was my experience with that.
Yeah.
It's pretty, pretty hard.
Yeah. And we're seeing the same thing here in Minneapolis of over and over again, the mayor has dealt with encampments by sending the police and public works in to just like sweep through and kick everybody out. And they throw, they take people's belongings and throw it out. Usually they switched. I think they had previously or initially like back in maybe 2020, 2021, they had given people some warning, but then protesters would show up and resist the clearance, and then they stopped warning people. They would just show up at, 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. or something. Wow. And I'm wondering if you ever saw anything like that or had your stuff thrown away while you were trying to survive out there, any similar experience you've had?
Yeah, I did have my stuff. Yeah, I was keeping my stuff in one space, and it was actually completely thrown away. I don't know what happened to it, but I had a few bags of stuff stored in a little place. It probably wasn't the best place to store it, all property, like just in the back of a house that I have connections to. But I guess still there was no warning. They were, it was just gone, you know, and that was hard, you know. So
yeah, was that like a big setback or?
Yeah, it was a pretty big setback. I had a bunch of clothes, you know, and I also knew that I couldn't, you know, use that space anymore to rest, you know, and sleep, you know, recarb. So it wasn't safe for me to be there, you know. That was made kind of clear, I guess, in a later date or something. But yeah, that stuff was gone. So it would have been nice to get a warning, you know.
Yeah.
I never found that stuff. So yeah. But
my recollection of talking to you around that time is that you were always seemed really stressed out, really, really high anxiety. Does that match what you remember or no?
Yeah, it was hard. You gotta wonder where you're gonna sleep, where you're gonna eat, like how you're gonna shower, you know, like where this was gonna go, you know. And there were some places, but it was not. I didn't feel like, especially I think it was actually a little bit easier because there was the BAO UA, like during the day. They had this program for youth. That was nice to go there. Only went there a little, but they did give out some supplies and stuff, and they had another detox place. But yeah, it was very hard time. Yeah, it was not an easy period to. It was not an easy thing to navigate, you know. So there's a lot of challenges with, like, especially if no one has no experience with that. Nobody wants to experience that, you know. I don't think people want willingly choose that life most of the time, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely have heard of some people who choose to live in encampments over living in a shelter, because I've read people say, like, look, they split me up from my friends, they split me up from my dog or my pet. And I'm wondering if you remember you know, like what your perception was at the time. Like, did you perceive like there were housing options, or like what did you feel like was on the table for you to have options for?
Well, I knew there was a shelter, but I also didn't want to, part of me didn't want to just be around all that, like all, because that era was, you know, the shelter was, didn't feel entirely necessarily, I guess maybe I was perception didn't feel as safe. It was just around all those people. And I just knew there were like strict requirements and rules. And I was just worried that it would be hard to like be like, you know, with all those people. I didn't really want to spend time at the shelter. It didn't feel like I would have rather been by myself than worry about that, if that makes sense. But it might have been a better option than some of the times I had, you know. But I think the shelter would have been, my knowledge that it was, seemed like it was probably, I know it was overcrowded, that was definitely one of the issues. But I think it might have been a better issue, I wish there was maybe an opportunity I could have taken with that. But I'm not necessarily saying it was a. I do think that, yeah, with encampments, with people choosing other places, I can totally see why they would probably do that at the shelter. Because I don't think the shelter is very, can sometimes doesn't seem very appealing. There were probably other reasons at the time that I don't, why they didn't, the shelter wasn't appealing to me. But I do think, like, I do think that that's understandable that people would want to choose other options instead of the shelter, because that's certainly what I did, you know. So at the time,
you remember anybody mentioning or offering any kind of housing where you'd like have your own space?
Not that I recall. I think the shelter was a bunch of people, especially the guy, they all just clustered together. You know, I think maybe my concern was that my belongings would get stolen too. Pretty sure that was probably a concern, maybe, or I wouldn't be safe. I don't know.
And you were pretty young, right? So like being around a bunch of people who, some of whom are going to be a lot older, might have felt unsafe as well.
Yeah, I think so. That was probably part of it. I was in my early 20s, so
yeah. Well, no, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just was going to say, yeah, it was, you know, I think the shelter wouldn't have been the worst place in the world. I think it might be a little better now than it was, but it's just smaller. It's more specialized, I guess, because they broke up the shelter into four different shelters, which not necessarily a better. I mean, they didn't really solve the housing. What they did was just create, you know, instead of all the housing, they just dispersed because all businesses did want it out of downtown, but they just broke it up into four different places across the city, you know, so with actually less total beds than the shelter had before.
Yeah.
But it does mean the women at least actually have more of a, their own, you know, there's a women's shelter. I think there's a kids, there's like a couple different shelters. Like, so, but they didn't actually fix the available bed problem. They just sort of spread the problem or the issue around. Mm-hmm.
So. Rick, I want to read you some quotes from a couple pieces that have come out on this issue in the last couple of years. So one is from this guy, Nick Magrino, who's a Minneapolis resident, wrote an op-ed in 2023 that the mayor reposted on Twitter and endorsed, basically said, this is smart. And a couple other things I want to read to you and just kind of get your reaction. One is, so here's the quote. Have you not seen them covered in feces, screaming at themselves, lying face down on bus shelter floors with their pants around their ankles, wandering into traffic on Franklin Avenue, fighting with ghosts and with each other? Put the phone down and look at them. They are human beings, not characters in a political mobile game. He goes on to say, the dealers, who do not appear to be hard to find, need to be prosecuted and locked up for the pain, suffering, and death they've caused. Their victims need to be humanely taken off the streets and cared for until they're able to function independently. People with mental health problems that leave them unable or unwilling to manage their own affairs need to be civilly committed.
Oh, geez. That's pretty strong language there from this person. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so just fear. Like off the dome. Yeah, what does that, like, what does that make you think about?
I mean, I've never seen the, first of all, I'll start with the description of the people feces screaming. I've definitely seen people talking to themselves and stuff, but I haven't seen the kind of bubble of craziness that person is describing. You know, I think that's sort of very much a, and then, but maybe it does happen. That seems like a very extreme and rare type of, you know, I mean, a behavior, you know. I think there are people who do have mental, you know, obviously people have health issues, but I don't think, certainly the way he's talking about getting people, the victims taken out, like just like there's some sort of, you know, disgrace to the society or whatever, seems very kind of very cold and not compassionate to me. You know, I don't think that's, and also another thing is, how can we trust the police of all people? This isn't a house, like they haven't, this, what would that even look like? You know, what is he talking, like some vague sense of rehabilitation? You know, that doesn't make me feel any better, you know, like committed, like is that going to actually treat people to fix that? Doesn't seem like this is any, I don't trust the language of this to, you know, to be a, come from a compassionate view, a stance that these people, that people would need, you know, mm-hmm. people suffering from being unhoused. And people mm-hmm. suffering from mental health would need. I don't see that as being a. I'm very skeptical of distrustful of stuff like that, especially using these terms that are very dehumanizing, I think, and calling and acting like there's some kind of huge problem that just needs to be like shut away. You know, I don't think that would frighten me, and that would frighten me. I was frightened. You know, and I guess in a way, I kind of was for a while, but yeah,
it strikes me similarly. I mean, maybe he's seen all those things, but like he combines all of these behaviors into like one single caricature that I agree. I don't know that I've ever seen somebody covered in feces. Yeah, I've seen people I've seen people use the bathroom in public, like in a variety of places.
Yeah.
But I've never seen somebody covered in feces screaming and fighting all at once. You know, it's just reads like this really extreme caricature.
Yeah, it doesn't. It just seems like they're making it sound the worst possible, like the craziest scenario. And yeah, I have not seen that. No, you know, I've never really even seen someone. I don't think I've seen anyone covered in feces. I think I may defecate, but yeah, I certainly don't see that kind of thing. You know,
I think people, And so at the end, right, one of his, you know, quote unquote solutions is to say, hey, people who are not willing to get treatment should be civilly committed, which is a way of saying like forcibly detained against their will, right? Like it's a form of incarceration. At its best, it's a form of incarceration with compassionate and competent care, but it's definitely incarceration. It's not like a gentle thing. And I'm wondering if you ever had experience of like anybody trying to civilly commit you or threatening to.
Well, I was committed sort of, I mean, there was that period and yeah, I mean, I think it was after I had gotten beat up for whatever, I stayed at the place and beat up at a some house because I overstayed somewhere, just from a college age students. And that was, and so I had gone to my family's house, but they weren't around. So I went up to my friend's house. I mentioned about like being depressed or made something common about, you know, wanting to, and it was probably all kinds of out of sorts too, you know, but I mentioned suicide. I mean, I may have mentioned something, but she drove me to the LDS hospital and I didn't know. And they ended up committing me, you know, that was forcibly, I mean, and I was there for a few months. So, you know, for 2 months or so, you know, so that was held against my will, you know, but I think it might have, I don't know. I don't think that would have, I think I just needed somebody to talk to and to calm down. I really think I needed to be committed. I just needed some sort of friend, you know, and I wasn't getting that through anybody else, you know, so
yeah,
I'm not sure the solution. I mean, at least I had a place to stay for a month or two, but I don't think they charged you anyway.
Yeah. What happened afterwards? Where were you living after that?
I just went right back into the streets. I think I remember they don't do anything. They don't set you up with anything after, you know, just let you out. Right. So, I mean, that's just
And that's happened. One of my concerns too, is like people say people are, you know, so this was an op-ed from a couple of years ago, but also like Donald Trump did this executive order, in July, just last month, also calling for people to be civilly committed. And part of what I'm very worried about is that this to me sounds like a solution that's where their first priority is just get people out of sight, without any thought or concern for like, well, what happens to these people?
Yeah.
Right. Like what's next, you know, like what's going to be the outcome. And, as I understand it, is like, you've got to today, at least when I checked in about Minnesota, it sounds like you have to be pretty sick, right? Like the standards are pretty high to get civilly committed. So it's not like there's a lot of beds that are just waiting, even if people started doing this.
Exactly. Yeah. I think they would just, I mean, it's to me, it sounds like the same thing. Just, they're just trying to throw people, you know, they're just trying to like keep people out of sight, out of mind. And they don't really have an actual idea of what that would look like or care. I think there's also a high propensity for abuse. I think I was lucky in the place that I was. It was it was in a pretty, you know, nice like wing of a hospital, but it could have definitely been a lot worse. You know, it could have been, you know, a stricter, you know, a more a place that was more, you know, where there was less care. You know, I think these people did care. The place I was in did have some caring, but I think there's plenty of places that didn't. And even then, it was just a short-term thing. They certainly didn't have a long-term, I don't think enough, you know, they didn't have enough area for a long-term treatment, something like that, you know, to hold people for a long time. So I don't know what that would really entail, you know.
When you eventually got off the streets, what was the housing that you got into?
Well, I had a little bit different than other people. I was lucky. I was had family assistance first I stayed. I actually met somebody and I stayed with them for a little bit. So that was sort of, I guess I've been homeless for a while. It was I stayed at a girl's house that I had met, I guess, for a while, you know. But then after that, I got some. A hotel room was paid for out of my sister helped me with that. So that's what happened.
And then, kind of more medium term, like eventually you got, because your parents had died, you got some like survivorship benefit through Social Security. And that's been helpful with housing costs. Do you feel like, do you ever think about like where you would be if you didn't have that benefit in terms of like housing and stability?
So no, I think so. Yeah. Your question was about where I would go. And I don't actually know what I would be doing if I wasn't. I think I'm lucky to have Social Security. I'm lucky to sort of have this inheritance from my parents as well. I don't really see it being, I mean, I could see myself potentially if things had worked out with working, but I'm not sure. Like, that's just a what if question. So yeah, if things hadn't worked out, I think I would probably be in a pretty hard place, you know, I might be back on the streets if I didn't have, you know, Social Security, or if I didn't have inheritance to help me. And I think there's a lot, and that's the situation for a lot of these people. I think like they could probably, you know, be like, okay, but you know, but they don't have the resources that I'm lucky to have the resources I do, but if they didn't have, they're kind of, they could be SOL, you know? I think that's like the unfortunate hard reality of having, of being homeless in America, you know, is there's just not a lot of support for people in general, you know? And I think it's very difficult.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. I mean, I think about the situation. I've read about other countries and what they've done to try to help alleviate the problem of street homelessness. And, you know, one of the approaches is broadly called housing first. And I think back to the years of knowing you, and you had the very unlucky circumstances of losing your parents and like very tragically young. But the fact that then there was this kind of financial benefit between the government and money left behind, where you kind of got a housing first solution de facto, right? Like you kind of like got the means to just give your housing without having to, you know, clear a bunch of hoops, like jump through a bunch of hoops to get it.
Right.
And that seems like it's been really helpful from my perspective.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, it's been very helpful I was just covering that, but yeah, I was lucky enough. I was unlucky in the sense that my parents passed, but I was lucky in the sense that there was resources available to help me with the transition to housing, you know, which was, you know, which has been very beneficial and like for continued benefits, which only actually, well, my benefits only did kind of, at least the ones I'm on because of my father passing, but they have been helpful in securing me like a long-term housing, you know, so that's been good. But ideally the hope is that I would still trying to transition to not needing this housing the income so I can hold type of a job and be able to pay for things myself is still the long-term goal. It's just been taking a while to get there. It's also, they also do restrict the benefits though, because they do make sure you can only work a certain amount, you know. But so they definitely put caveats on it, and I think that could also make it harder for people that want to work.
Right.
For how much? Yeah. So. Yeah.
Right. And I definitely heard stories about that. People who are on just like regular SSI and how punitive the financial penalties are, where they've got to really manage like how much can I work? If I work a little too much, then it's a huge headache and I, you know, might end up with less money.
Cause it's and like, almost like
there's just this, there's this newer, you know, there's this newer school of thought of like people were talking about UBI and people were talking about housing first, which is like, if we help people first, then their outcomes are going to be better.
Yeah.
And versus making people like bureaucracy.
Yeah. Cause that's the thing is like, they claim they want people to work, but then they make it like really hard. Like, they make it hard to like, cause they're so punitive that it's like almost encourages you not to like, like do more work because you don't want to risk losing your benefits. You know, like it's like, it's a question of how much you have to like, you know, it's a number, it becomes a numbers game. And I'm lucky that mine's the type of benefit I'm on is the and forgiving them that, but I guess I know the regular SSI is much more stringent, you know, about those requirements. So
see people, and it does seem quite punitive to me. Yes. So, yeah, it's been, but yeah, I'm glad. Yeah. I think makes it the study. I think I read a study out of California or something that came out when they did actually set up, they had a huge success rate when they did actually set up just this treatment for the unhoused, for the program. Like they just set up treatment, like program with a lot of, they had a high retention rate of people, you know, that was a treatment to transition. They did actually have a high retention rate of people that showed that it was successful, you know? So I think that, you know, I think it shows on us, at least on a small scale, that these, that people do generally do well, you know, because if with support do tend to do well in the right programs that do want to stay out and do stay off the street and don't go back. So, you know,
well, Frankie, do you have any advice, like, for people who maybe haven't experienced homelessness, maybe haven't experienced serious mental illness, when folks see people on the streets in an encampment or like hanging out at a bench, you know, or on the train doing drugs, like, how do you think your average person, like, what would you say, like, people, how should people treat or like react to people in those situations?
Well, I think people should just treat them like, think like there are other people that are just in different part, you know, instead of people that are like skateboarders, they're still human, they're human beings, and they probably had some, and it's not necessarily, oh, this person did something to mess up their life, is this in their life, and a lot of the people, and they're probably having a hard time, and it's choose to be, you know, homeless, or, you know, choose these choices. And I think we should just approach with compassion and understanding and respect rather than fear and, you know, hatred and sort of just like turning people away, you know. And I think it's some of these people have really interesting stories. Some of the interesting people I met some pretty interesting people when I was homeless. Definitely didn't even use drugs or substances. They were trying to live, and they might sound a little out there, but I remember passionate people that helped me through it when I was, you know, again, shared food and you know, taught and were supportive. And there were also people that just let me stay at, like, or letting just stay in someone's backyard for a little bit, you know, few days, and that was very kind. So there are people out there who are helpful, you know, in that recovery. And I think it would definitely to meet, and it's the nicer people stand out as well, you know. So because that they did make that a little bit less, you know, painful, you know. So so I think, so when you have compassion, I think it helps.
Yeah. Do you have any opinion on, like, would people hand out supplies to folks on the street, or like you said, like, give people a place to stay for a few days? Do you think that, like, overall just like reduces the pain of the experience, or do you think it also enables people to like not fix their problems, which I think a lot of people think?
I don't think it enables people. No, I think if it's like, especially like, I don't think any of it was like, I mean, unless it's like, maybe like if you're giving someone like years or something, or a month or two, or like a few days. I didn't really have a few days at different places or a night, or hugely helpful. Just even that little small reprieve of like where I'm going to be was very nice. And certainly giving food, like having food, was very helpful. And I'm not necessarily sure about like giving food. I think, you know, was very helpful.
Your audio is cutting up a little bit.
Okay. Well, I know. Sorry. I know. I'm just saying, I think food was very helpful. I think having a place to stay was a few nights was very helpful. I don't see this as enabling. I think the average person would see this. I don't think that was really, that was never like the issue. Like it was still like a long-term issue. But it did help like for a few nights, you know, make that pain a little bit more bearable, you know? So, yeah, that's part of it, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that covers a lot of my questions. Anything like in general that you want people to know or think about around these issues?
I mean, I think we should just sort of nothing I haven't really said this much before. Well, I guess, yeah, I just think people should,
be tolerant and understanding. I think I still struggle this today to try to remember how it is, because sometimes I'm still catching myself sliding back into being judgmental. And I think that's not how I would want to be, because I've been there. And I think, you know, my circumstances, I guess I never really was addressed how I became homeless. So I guess based the series, I did make some choices that weren't great, but I also had a different family situation, different mental health things come up. So I don't necessarily think it was my fault. But I do think, you know, that navigating, you know, it was probably maybe an easier time than to navigate this, in some sense, because there was less, it doesn't seem like there was this crackdown that's happening now. I think that's the exact opposite of where we should be going with this, with policy, you know. And I think so, but I definitely think there wasn't support. I don't know. It doesn't seem like there was good support then. There was good support now, but maybe understanding is getting a little bit better now. But there's also been a back increase. You know, it's also response the other way, where there's more fear too. So I'm not sure, you know, but I think understood coming with an open heart is good. You know, I think so.
Yeah. Well, one thing I, you know, want people to know is, like, I think the statistics, the research shows that, like, people who are experiencing homelessness or serious mental illness are much more vulnerable to some kind of harm. Much more likely to experience harm themselves than to actually, like, act out and harm somebody else.
I could definitely see that. I definitely feel like myself. Well, I mean, there were situations I got beat up twice when I was homeless. So there's parts of it was my mental health stuff, but I don't recall ever in my life having that kind of issue before. Not really, you know, when I wasn't, you know, on this, you know, serious mental health challenges. But yeah, I do think, like, it wasn't as safe, you know. I was meeting people that were also not safe, questions, choices that were not. Part of it's also being lonely, or so I was, felt so lonely that people want to hang out with anybody necessarily, you know, even people that are, like, not, and people want to have a roof over their heads. They're willing to take bigger risks, you know. So I think that's, you know, That can be very scary for some people. If people are don't have people's best interest in mind, you know, which often they don't, I think, especially with drugs and stuff. So, you know, So it is, I didn't really see the home being scary. I didn't see that at all. I really just saw the situations maybe I would put myself in with other people that necessarily weren't homeless as maybe scary, you know. So, yeah. I mean, the people that, yeah, the violence that I experienced wasn't from people that were homeless. I can say that much. Yeah.
Well, Frank, I'm very sorry you went through all that. And I'm glad you're here now. And I'm glad you got a place to live.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad you're having this wonderful podcast for you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like, a lot of people just haven't experienced anything like this and only have their, like, kind of like gut reactions to go off of. So I really appreciate you being willing to do this, and because I wanted to include your voice, right? I don't want to just talk about you. I want to, like, have people hear what you have to say in your own words.
Yeah, sure. I wish I could be, like, a little bit more, even more into, I just remember the crushing feeling of sort of despair during that time and how hard it was and how, but I think a lot of them, that I'm sure if I was experiencing that, I'm sure a lot of people are experiencing that. And it's very taxing on mental health. You know, I think it's just like blame people for their choices or some of their behaviors when they're going through or just being, you know, back to Jesse's earlier question about how the, you know, anxiety, like how it felt is such a emotion, you know, like, mentally and emotionally and even physically, every aspect is just really draining.
Yeah.
So it's just so hard for people. So yeah, like, it's really a different, completely different experience than anything that you use anything and having, you know, but being housed. It's hard to even, like, explain, you know, it's hard to even, like, talk, like to go there without, you know, without like being that friend. Like, yeah, it's hard to, because it's so, it's such a difficult, it's just a different thing than anything I've ever experienced before.
So, yeah.
I wouldn't want anyone to experience that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I haven't had that experience. And I think you're right. A lot of people who haven't gone through that can't really say they know what that's like.
I know. I was also just a very short time. I'm lucky that it was. I couldn't imagine. And I would think it'd be also like it. It was just a, you know, what's a few years, you know, a few months was that hard. Imagine if like 5 years, a few years, you know, 10 years. How would that that's very, very difficult, you know. So something I can't relate. I mean, I don't know if this really can relate to, but you know, just a few months I could see it was hell.
Well, thank you, Frank. I think this went really well. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse. Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. I'll stop recording.
Can we do the ding chime thing or da-ding?